My Family Recipe is a new podcast from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network, bringing you cherished heirloom recipes and the stories behind them. Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Item 13, an African food podcast, and I'm your host, Yom Akuaku. Every week, we'll delve into the delicious world of African food, including chefs, curators, and bloggers. Here's the show.
Welcome to another episode of Item 13. I'm so thrilled, not just thrilled, but honored to have my friend, I think I can call you my friend Z, on the show. We're going to talk tacos in the context of African food. We're going to talk Zimbabwean food, life in New York, all that good stuff. So welcome to the show, Z.
Thank you. And yes, you can definitely call me your friend. And I'm happy to call you my friend as well.
Z will tell us a little bit about, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about yourself, your full name? Like, you know, we all do the short African names. And it's funny because a lot of people think that my name is a short name for something. I always get the question, like, oh, Yom, because, you know, like, African, right? Because African names tend to be, like, so long and, like, you know. And I'm like, nope, that's it. That's it, pretty much. So Z will tell us his full name. And then tell us a little bit about you, where you grew up and sort of how you ended up here stateside. As much as little as you want to share, obviously.
Absolutely. So before I get into my full name, this is something I struggle with. Mm. On a day-to-day life, especially being an African immigrant living in America and having to cross paths with people from all over the world. Mm-hmm. So I walk into a doctor's appointment, I walk into a bank, I walk into the pharmacy, and immediately it's like, oh, sorry, I don't want to butcher this name, but such right? and such, right? So you deal with that already, and then you get to the counter and they're like, what is your name? And I'm like, no, you can call me Z, because I don't want to deal with the whole explanation. And they're like, no, but I want to know, right? And I want to try. How do you say it? And then I say my full name and they're like, oh yeah, you're right. So I'm like, let's not even go through all that. But these are some of the struggles that African immigrants, and especially, like, not just African immigrants, immigrants from all over the world still with right. in New
yeah,
York.
Even my and, short name, like, people stop. So even, like, it's so funny you say that, because when I go anywhere to order food, and I don't know if I've done this with you, like, I just give them an English name. Because even with, like, my short name, it's like, what is a dog? No, I'm from Cheers. And then I'm like, I don't want to have this, like you, right? I don't want to have this long conversation with you. So here we go.
My full name is Zinyusile. It means I brought myself up, if I'm translating it directly.
I don't think I knew that.
Yeah, it originates from the Zulu tribe in South Africa.
Zinyusile. Hmm.
Yeah. the name originates from the Zulu tribe in South Africa, which kind of ties into my upbringing. Mm-hmm. I was born and raised in Zimbabwe, but my father naturalized into a South African. So I spent most of my childhood in between both Zimbabwe and South Africa.
Cool.
That was my upbringing. I came to the United States in 2009. I've been a Harlem resident since 2014. Yeah. cooking wasn't, and I feel like we'll dive into this later. Mm.
You can start to tell us now. So how did you get into cooking? Because that's one of the things, when I every time I have guys, especially on the show, it's like, especially in our culture, right? Like, it's women who tend to do a lot of the cooking. And so, and if you find men in cooking, it's almost always in a professional setting. It's not like, it's not typical to find
recreational, just like at home cooking, right?
Yes.
So, still giving credit to the women, because women are phenomenal. my cooking is really like truly a gift from my grandmother, who is the person who raised me. I grew up as an asthma kid. I had asthma growing up, and because of somewhat limited resources, I wasn't always able to be physically active, because physical activity triggered asthma attacks. Asthma attacks needed medication. Medication needed money. So, long story short, I couldn't play with the kids outside. And my grandma had to find creative ways to keep me busy and out of trouble. So from a very young age, she started to teach me how to cook. In the beginning, I didn't pay much mind to it. I didn't care for it, because, like, again, like you said, it, as sad as it is, it's still true that, like, cooking has kind of been left to the women, whereas it's really just an everybody thing. If you're living and you're eating, you should cook.
So
in the beginning, I didn't pay it any mind. I didn't care, until one day when she got sick and she couldn't cook. And I cooked for her. I made her breakfast. I made scrambled eggs. Like, you know, back home, you fry some onions, you fry some tomatoes, you mix it with eggs, and you eat that with bread. Like, that's breakfast, right? I made that. And, like, just her face when I gave it to her, and the way she received it sparked joy in me. And I've always chased that same feeling when I cook now. But fast forward to professional cooking. So I never thought I'd like be a professional cook. I don't even consider myself a chef, but that's a story for another day. I came to America 2009, following like the five African staple careers: engineer, accountant, doctor, lawyer.
Good stuff.
So I got accepted to Pace University. Big deal. I'm taking an accounting course. I do it for 1 year. 1.5 years through, I'm like, no, this is really not for me. I don't like it one bit. I drop out and I go back to work. I start working retail. And when I'm working retail, I used to cook a lot at home, and I bring food to share with coworkers. And one of my coworkers says, I'm having a rooftop party. Like, me and my teammates are doing a rooftop party. You should come and sell your food there. At that point, I'd never sold food a day in my life. But I said, you know what, like, what's the worst thing that could happen? I took the risk. I said, let's do it. First, I said it was like going to be just 50 people, and then the 50 grew to 100. And then the party kept growing until the venue said the most we could hold is about 300 people. The day comes, 300 people show up, and I sold food. I sold out. That's I made insane. More money. Yeah, I made more money in that one day as I would have working the same retail jobs for 2 weeks. So that was the aha moment. Like, you know what? I think you can survive off of this, and you can live off of this. So from that day, I think I took it seriously.
Cool. And that's so I've had your food, you know, on different occasions. And I'm always blown, and I'm not someone that exaggerates, I'm always blown away by your flavor profiles in particular. I think you have a really great skill of being one, understanding, and that's what I don't know if you will share your secret sauce, but like you have an understanding of, well, separately, you have an understanding of flavor profiles, right? But then I also think you have like a really acute understanding too of like the different nuances in African flavor profiles too. And so when you say, and maybe, and that's, let's talk about that. So your business is Taco Africana, your food business is Taco Africana, and Z makes tacos, you know, inspired by African cuisine. And, you know, I'm always, if you've listened to the show forever, you know that I'm always skeptical about people that say their food is African food, because that's like such a, you know, it's such a broad, and there's so much to it or whatever. And so, but I remember having, like the first time we met, actually, was this in Harlem? We met at some... Sunday, some event you were having where there was a DJ, I remember.
This was Brooklyn, yes.
Brooklyn? Oh, yeah.
It was Yes.
And like Z basically made, and I'll share this picture actually so people can picture this. Z basically gave me his entire menu, made a whole platter of the entire menu for me. And because I've lived in Southern Africa and I had East African friends when I was there, obviously I'm West African. And then everybody, you know, most people have had North African food just because of, just by virtue of how popular it is around here. So I remember, you're back, right? So yes, I just remember like trying jollof rice is what you called it. And this, and I need to be clear, I need to clearly pronounce it. So I'm not saying jollof rice, I'm saying jollof fries. So he had this, and I was like, what in the world? What is this gimmicky thing? And my goodness, just like, it was so good. So good. And it was, you know, clever play and all. I just remember trying everything and being like, wow. And my friends who lived in New York then, I remember texting, oh, you're right, I was in Brooklyn, because I had passed by Brooklyn Suya.
Uh-huh.
A weekend too, so I was in Brooklyn. I remember texting my friend, being like, you have to try, like, I'm, because I didn't live in New York then, I don't remember where I live, but I was like, you have to, I need to share this guy's number with you, you need to follow him on Instagram so that when he does his stuff, because this was so good. So that was my first experience with Z and like Taco Africana. I just wanted to share that. It was, I personally was blown out. It was like such a fantastic idea and well executed. So let's talk about Taco Africana. Like, what, why tacos? And then sort of how did you start it? What was your inspiration to sort of do like Taco Africana?
Well, long story. okay. So rewind before Taco Africana. Mm. This is nice because I feel like I'm not telling my life story in different segments. So to continue from like that party.
Yeah, from that party.
Mm-hmm. I ended up signing up like in a 3-month program at a community college in Brooklyn called Kingsborough Community College. It was just like a basic introduction into restaurant life. They taught you how to hold a knife, how to do dishes, how to sanitize dishes, basic soups, basic salads, basically just like a small, compact 3-month course that you could get hired in a restaurant as a prep cook because you have this.
Yeah.
I took that course, and as like part of the program, I was one of the selected few to go and volunteer at a good cause called Chefs for Impact. It's run by Impact Network. Impact Network is a non-for-profit that's based here in New York, but it serves children in Zambia with school supplies and just getting them education. So I do this event, and those of you who know like some of the restaurateurs, hey, English, some of the restaurateurs here in America, Mark Hennigan, who was the owner of Madiba, famous South African restaurant, in Brooklyn for almost 18 years, actually 18 years plus. He was one of the guest chefs for that night. I volunteered and I so happened to be paired with him.
Oh,
and yeah, I'm like, I help him out. And we start talking about life throughout service. And I'm like, dude, I'm working retail right now and going to school. I don't like this retail job. And I really want to cook. This is what I'm passionate about. And he says, okay, I'm opening a second location for Madiba in Harlem. You should come tomorrow and start working. And like, just like that, I quit my retail job and started working in kitchens the next day. So my introduction to restaurant service and professional cooking was Madiba, a South African restaurant. But funny story, like most, if not all, restaurants here in New York City is ethnic, and I say ethnic very closely with quotation marks. These ethnic restaurants are fully staffed by usually Hispanic people in the back. The case at Madiba was Mexican people. So in the beginning, it wasn't sweet. I won't lie. There was language differences. There were cultural differences. We didn't see eye to eye, but eventually, I guess Ubuntu, like, the spirit of humanity took over and we realized, hey, we're here for the same goals.
Ubuntu.
We started, we started sharing different recipes, and then I taught them stuff from South Africa, and they introduced me to Mexican food. I fell in love with tacos. And after Madiba, I had been doing my own thing. My first food business was called Mzansi, which is a slang term for South Africa. I catered different South African cuisines. I did events and pop-ups. And I did it for about a year to almost 2 years. Yeah, that was 2014 to about 2016. And it sucked because I got stuck and I realized that South Africa or Southern Africa in general is a very tiny portion of the continent and yet alone the world. So how do I expand my caliber and be able to cater to people from literally all over the world, but at the same time still honoring my culture, representing the traditional recipes and also giving it a modern twist to it? And I don't usually confess this in public, but I experienced that a quarter life crisis, and I had to shut everything down. And I had two tunnels. One tunnel was leading to New Orleans. If I went to New Orleans, I was going to do African barbecue. So like the peri-peris, the fries, the suyas, but like with traditional American style cooking, like smoking and all this stuff. Or stay in New York and do tacos. And I took a road trip. I drove from here to New Orleans. I loved New Orleans, but the weather killed me. It was super humid. I couldn't breathe, and I had asthma. I found my way back to New York, and it was tacos. And I think that's how it just solidified. But the biggest thing for me with both concepts was that I'll start with the barbecue because I feel like it's a little bit less important right now. People love meat. People love meat as much as people are like transitioning to plant-based diets, vegan-based diets, sustainable diets. We are carnivores by nature. So I felt like I would be offering something to a large group of people, something that's familiar to a large group of people, but with a different twist. Like, this is how we do meat in Africa. Same thing with taco africana. It's a concept that's familiar to most people in the world. Anywhere you go in the world, everybody kind of knows what a taco is. And it's something that's versatile. It's something that's approachable. But I can also add my culture to it,
right?
And
yeah.
I would share it. So for reasons I explained before, New Orleans didn't do for me at that time. It doesn't mean that it won't happen,
yeah.
but it didn't work at that time. This is how we ended up with Tanta
Africana. And I remember coming, you know, after that experience, and even just thinking about it later, like how brilliant, and I, you know, maybe in hindsight, maybe for you wasn't, but I just thought, wow, because what a way, what a vehicle to share like African food, right? Like, as people get the sense, and, you know, there's a whole other conversation about why food is not, you know, considered whatever, but at least tacos people have sort of now familiarized themselves with, and like, you know, it's quote unquote cool in the food world. And so I see that being a great vehicle for the different kinds of foods and stuff that you've done. And it's versatile, right? You can take it anywhere. You can be a taco shop or like pop-up, you know, you can do it almost anywhere, right? So
I've catered funerals, I've catered weddings, I've catered graduation parties.
Yeah.
So like it's something that I feel like you can eat anywhere. But what I like the most about it is that it's very approachable.
Yes, yes. That's the word I was looking for.
Very approachable.
Yep. Okay, so let's talk about your standard menu, and then we'll take a break. And then when we come back from, so let's talk about your standard menu first, just like generally, because I know, I actually wonder if you'll tell me there's no standard menu. you switch it up, but like generally speaking, I feel like you always have some sort of West African stuff, and then you'll have Southern African stuff. And so what is the recurring, you know, what are some of the cool, so that for people who are listening and who might come across you in New York or maybe sometime in New Orleans. What can they expect in terms of the menu? And for the everyone that's listening, like as always, after the show, you know, when the show airs, I will share links to Z's stuff, so you can follow him and see where he's going to be popping up. But just and pictures of his food too, obviously. But for while we listen now, if you can describe some of the main aspects of the menu you have generally have.
Okay. So general overview of our menu, offer multiple, I don't even know the right word for it, multiple approaches to Mexican-inspired African food. So we do tacos, we do quesadillas, we do burritos, we do grain bowls. By grain bowls, I mean it could be rice, jollof rice, yellow rice and raisins. If you're South African, we do fonio, we do cauliflower rice. We do sides. We do elotes, which is a Mexican-style street corn. We do plantains, we do chips and guac. So typical Mexican food, but with an African twist. But the most interesting part, of course, is the fillings. The fillings, the base of the vehicle is Mexican. It's really just Mexican cuisine. But what's inside is like what matters to me the most. And those are the fillings. Our house fillings, you can get this on any of the items I mentioned, the fries, the burritos, the quesadillas, the tacos. We have three main house tacos. I'll start off with my favorite because I think it's the best, and people differ, and people who know food will agree with me, but I get it. You like what you like, so no offense. Sorry, no judging. This is no offense. The first one and my favorite one is, and correct me if I'm wrong, but
I was gonna say, like, I'm waiting with agent friends to see if I'm gonna agree or not.
Way. They say it this way in Ghana, Nkatsekwan.
Oh, are you for real?
Yes, so no that's way. My favorite. That's my favorite feeling. It's a groundnut or peanut sauce braised pork. I take a pork chunk, could be a butt, it could be a shoulder. Spanish people call it pernil. But I cook it Mexican barbacoa style. So I'll sear it first, and then I braise it in the peanut sauce, cover it with banana leaf, and I put a bunch of veggies and citrus in it. And it's so tender and so delicious. But what makes it more flavorful for me is what I put with it. So there's the peanut butter in the pork, which is like just phenomenal on its own. But I use tomatillo salsa, which are green tomatoes. And I pickle, like a flesh pickle, red cabbage. So just that combination alone, like the peanut butter, the acidity from the tomatoes, and then the acidity from the pickles, and then a little bit of sweetness from it. It's just like, it's phenomenal for me. I talk about that taco the most because it's it. People say don't pick a favorite child in public. That's my favorite child.
Oh, man.
And after that is our most famous filling, which is our jerk con jollof. You could get it as fries, as tacos, or as a grain ball. It's usually a jollof base. It could be the tortillas that are jollof. It could be the fries or the burrito or the rice. And then we top that with jerk chicken and our house-made mango salsa. So you get a mix of spicy, sweet, but this is nice because it's a combination of both Caribbean and African cultures. So a lot of people usually run for that one and they love it. I don't, again, I'm not judging you, but I think the pork, like that's the best one so far. And like I said before, originally human beings are carnivores. Fight me somewhere else, not on this podcast. DM me if you disagree. Let's be grown up and talk about it. But for my friends who have turned plant-based or vegan, I have what I call the peri flower. It's a roasted cauliflower head that's roasted in a house-made peri-peri sauce. And that also comes with the mango salsa. So you still get the sweet and the spicy. And then now we're also tying in a little bit of Southern African culture via Portugal. So really, the base menu of the house is kind of international. It caters to a little bit of everyone.
Yeah.
And then in addition to that, we do different specials. Like I've done an all black taco, which was a charcoal glazed tortilla with a squid ink braised octopus, and it had black caviar pearls. And then just because I think black is beautiful and golden, I put an actual gold leaf on it.
I remember that, yeah.
we've done shrimp tacos. We've actually done tangerine tacos as well. We've done ice cream tacos. So this, it goes beyond the imagination. Like, your only barrier with tacos, I think, is your imagination. So be ready to experience all
kinds
of things.
Yeah, I know. You just made us all so hungry right now.
Bringing Pepe. Like, in the future, expect, which I have done before, expect alligator tacos, expect ostrich tacos. When I go to Africa and I finally get access to it again and again, I'm against poaching and I'm against animal killing, but if food is made to be eaten, food is made to be eaten. So I want to make impala tacos. I want to yes. There's and we'll talk about this later when we talk about Zim food. My father, who has kind of been a hater towards my taco business, is always like, oh, you think you're going to survive off of tacos? You should come back home and work for me. I'm like, no, this is my thing.
Yeah.
He's always saying I have to make, there's something we call mopane worms.
Oh my gosh,
Southern
yes.
Africa. Yes. so they kind of look like caterpillars, but they're not caterpillars.
Yeah.
So we have that, and he keeps saying you have to make a taco with that. So hopefully one day I'll get to do that.
I don't know about that. Okay, so maybe this is a good time. We'll take a short break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about Zimbabwean food and these mokane worms. Oh gosh. we will be right back.
Thank you.
good food is worth a thousand words. This is Aarti Menon, and I'm delighted to share a new podcast with you, My Family Recipe, from Food 52 and Heritage Radio Network. Adapted from Food 52's much-loved column of the same name, the My Family Recipe podcast will bring its pages to life. Each episode of My Family Recipe brings you a cherished heirloom recipe and the story behind it, from voices across the world of food.
We'd open these tubs of dough and they would exhaust these incredible yeasty fumes, and it just smelled like nothing else. It was so intoxicating.
I'll interview writers and chefs, parents and children, about what's passed down along with the foods that we know and love.
Chinese people aren't like born with a download on how to like velvet chicken. You know, like that's not something that just like comes to you.
Listen and follow wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, so we are back after a little chit-chat. And now we're going to be talking about Zim food. So like I was telling you offline, I was trying to remember if I'd had someone. Maybe, you know, I probably haven't, so I shouldn't say. But anyway, for those who are listening, you know, we have a whole bunch of new listeners. And so want to do an education on Zimbabwean food. Like, so what is food from Zim? Like, what sort of staples do you have? Like, what do you do for snacks, for drinks? And we can talk about the worms.
Wow. I wish there was a food there was a word for people who kind of, I'm trying to tread lightly because these are sensitive times.
Right.
In reference to people who discriminate against race, they're called racists. Reference to people who discriminate against gender, I don't know what the word is, but I feel like there should be a word for people who discriminate against food.
I'm not discriminating, it's just oh my gosh. Anyway, let's talk about
don't knock it until you try it.
It's probably one of those things where I have to like close my eyes like and not think about like what it is,
yeah,
before I kind of enjoy it, because just knowing what it is just makes me like queasy, you know.
Are you like one of those people who don't want to know until they taste and then you're told after?
Yeah, I feel like, yeah, I don't want to know. Because I actually, we're going sidetrack, but like I was in, which reminds me of my friend. Anyway, I had a friend in Indonesia who I went to visit a very long time ago. And she took me to this restaurant, you know, she took me to all the local places. We went to a restaurant where they had all these little plates, almost like a Korean, you know how Koreans also serve like little dishes.
Yeah.
So there's all a little bit of everything that you try. And like after we were done, she was like, I should have known. But she kept asking me when I tried something in particular. She was like, how do you like that? I was like, ah. And it turned out to be cow brain. And I was like, oh my
God. Oh, nice.
Nice. I was like, oh. And you know, it's again, you're right. Like if I had known, I mean, I knew that the texture was like, maybe not to my, you know, taste, but I was like, it's flavored, you know, it's flavored nicely or whatever. So, but yeah, I feel like if I had known ahead of time, and she knew probably, you know, that I probably wouldn't have tried it. So anyway, Zimbabwean food.
Wow, that's exciting. Before I dive into Zimbabwean food, I'm not going to segue. I'm still going to stay in the concept of like cows and all the stuff. Mm. We use everything. Right. Like in my country, like we use everything.
We eat
intestines. We eat.
Yep.
Heart,
so that lung, I'm used to, you know, like I'm used to liver, like I'm used to like the, you know, we use the tripe, like the insides, so, you know, to make soup, and so I'm used to I'm used to that. And even like, you know how we cook the fish whole, right? So like, you know, I remember as a kid, like taking the eye out of the sorry for those who don't, like I feel like for my American audience it sounds weird, but like as a kid, like that was my favorite part, like taking apart the fish head.
Yeah.
And even not just as a kid, even as an adult, mom, by taking apart the fish head and like all of that goodness inside, because a lot of the flavor gets trapped in.
I mean, we even eat the blood of the cow. Like,
I know that there's a lot of different treatments to that too. Yep.
Well, I feel like we'll end up talking for hours and hours about Zimbabwean food. Before I get into Zimbabwean food, Southern African food in general, we farm a lot of corn. So corn is a big staple in Southern Africa. We process the corn into something called millimill. In America, they call it cornmeal. And from that, in South Africa, they call it pap. We call it ischwala in Zimbabwe, or sadza. It's ugali, I think, in Kenya. I forget what they call it in Zambia. Maybe it's nshima. But basically, it's just pounded cornmeal to the form of like something similar to fufu or polenta. And are you here?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you not hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you. Sorry.
Okay.
Yeah, so you pound the cornmeal into a texture very similar to fufu or polenta. We eat that with usually collard greens or some kind of greens and meat. That's the staple.
Yeah.
If the family is not doing well, that's breakfast, lunch, and dinner. The family is doing okay, that's lunch and dinner. So it's the staple.
Yeah.
In addition to that, also kind of tying back to what you said earlier, and you didn't really get into it a lot, like this whole idea of African food has become very congested and limited, but really African food to me is the foundation of soul food in America.
Right.
Yeah. All the ingredients they use in Southern cooking is stuff that we grew up eating back home. I don't want to get into it, but it only makes sense because you take people from one land and you put them in the other land. They're only going to eat what they're used to eating, and they're only going to eat what they know. So this stuff was brought by our people, but that's a story for another day. Zimbabwean food outside of pap or ischwala, there's something called nobi. It is a pumpkin porridge using the same cornmeal. You'd puree pumpkin and then just knead it into that, and it's kind of like a sweeter version of pap. You could eat it alone for breakfast with tea and you're good for the day. We have something called millet, which we call munga. It's also a grain. You could cook it the same way you cook pap. There's a lot of greens in our diet. So like the collards, the kale. We have tunga, which is mustard greens in Zimbabwe. And I don't know if you have this in Ghana, Yom, but every time it rains in Southern Africa, there's an insect that comes out. It's a fly insect. And it only comes out when it rains.
And then people fry them, collect them, and fry them.
Yes. So we eat that back home. In Shona, they're called matnora. In Ndebele, they're called amatimbi. And those are the mopane worms. If maybe it's possible, we'll add a picture to it.
I have pictures of worms in different, because I found a company actually that does actually in Ghana that does like different treatments for them. They're trying to make it cool and fashionable or whatever. So they treat them like kebabs, so they'll use suya and whatever and have it as kebabs. Oh. They've also done them. I just remember running across that and just being like, wow. Okay.
We also eat matemba, which is called carpenter here, I think. It's baby fish. It's not, it's not sardines. And it's not, what's this fish that they put in Caesar salad?
I don't anchovies?
Yeah, it's not anchovies, but it's just dried baby fish. We eat that a lot as well. We eat sorghum. Sorghum, we eat it like as you would eat sugarcane, but the head of the sorghum is a grain as well. So you could harvest that and process it and eat that as well.
The grains sound very familiar to us too.
Wintertime going into summertime sometimes. Breakfast has to be quick. Breakfast has to not consume a lot of heat and time, and it also has to like fulfill you for the day. So sometimes we'll eat a lot of boiled corn and nuts for breakfast. There also is a snack.
Snack, yeah. I didn't know that. We have that too, like boiled corn and peanuts, and especially even sometimes coconut.
Yes,
added to that.
We have black-eyed peas, which you guys use for red. We put them in like crushed corn dishes, which is called dumbushu, or you just boil them and eat them as is. And that same family of legumes is what they call here in America the jujube. Actually the bambara nut.
We do bambara beans also. So we do we eat it in the same, well, kind of similar way with plantains also.
Yeah.
But we do that. So we will usually, you know, and again, this is part of, you know, this whole idea of like African food, or even like saying Zimbabwean food, right? So because it's different ethnic groups also within the country treat things differently. So the example I'm about to give before the Ghanaians come from my head specifically among the Ewes, we do bambara beans with super ripe plantains that you mash and you add spices and you fry like a frita. And so that's how we eat it, bambara beans. And you can add either sugar, which is weird to bambara beans, or sometimes like palm oil, depending on your, so we can do it sweet. Like I remember my grandma used to add sugar to the bambara beans, and kaplu is what we call the plantain situation. Wow. So, but I know that people have different treatments for it. The Ghanaians listening, so I'm just sharing from like my, you know, where my mom comes from, what how they treat it. So.
Would you say it's similar to akara?
Yes. Yeah, except that, like, right, akara. But we also have akara, right, where we use beans and spices. Yes. So we have, but it looks like, yeah, so it looks like that, like a frita. I don't know if that's what you'd call it from a culinary perspective.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice. So last two. Last two, I think you have this in Ghana too. And I feel like it's kind of pops up in Africa. It's a very popular treat. In Ndebele, it's called umkomo. Mm-hmm. In Shona, it's mawuyu. It's the baobab fruit.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
We talked about the baobab actually a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I had a Ghanaian guest on who, so we have it in northern Ghana, which, like, I grew up in southern Ghana, so I actually don't know too much about baobab, but she was talking on the podcast, she was sharing, like, all the different nutritional, and like you, she had health issues growing up, and so, like, some of the foods that she ended up having to eat from home, which she's trying to revive again, because, like, especially, it's so funny now when you think about health trends, and you and I have talked about this separately, like all the sort of health trends and like superfoods and all of that, you know, going, it all goes back to the grains and the foods that we grew up eating back home.
You stuff know? Like moringa.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
All that stuff, so.
Wow.
It's interesting to say the least. Okay, so what's the last one, and then we'll move to like your business in New York.
Sweet. The last one we call, and I'm not sure if this is the right English word for it. I've been trying to find the right English word for it. We call it umgi in my country where I come from. It's basically like Google says it's a jujube or jujube.
Google says.
Yeah. If you Google it, it's a Chinese date. So it doesn't even look like a date. It looks like a berry. But you harvest it and then you let it dry and then you just eat that as a snack. It is so good. It's so good.
That's good. Good, good, good. All our food is good, I think. Some may argue differently, but okay. So, because we're running out of time, let's wrap up. So I want to talk about, like, because you made it all sound so easy so far, to be honest.
Wow.
Like, I dropped out. You know, I started with accounting, dropped out, then I ended up in this place for 3 months. And I just happened to be working next to the chef, and he gave me this job. And then I met the Mexicans and Taco Africa. It all sounds like, this happened. So, like, I want us to take a step back and, like, sort of be, I want to say be real, but, like, share some of the challenges, I guess, like, what it's like to build a business, on a couple of different dimensions. One, as a solo entrepreneur, right? Two, as an immigrant entrepreneur. And then 3, in a city that is not, you know, like there's a restaurant, like you can't walk anywhere and not have a restaurant. There's a restaurant everywhere, right? And maybe even 4, like it's one of the most expensive cities in the world. So all of those factors. So talk to me about what it's been like to try to build your business in the city. And we can talk about everything from even sourcing, you know, because some of the African ingredients that you use, to like finding labor, people to help, and any sort of lessons that you've learned. For anyone that's listening that might be interested in starting their own business in the city, or just even understanding the plight of small food business owners in New York.
Okay.
Like, where do I start?
So, outside of just like giving me the foundation to my culinary career, I also look to and appreciate the way my grandma was as a person, which shifted on how I was raised as a person, where she taught me not to complain too much, but look for solutions. So I will twist that question if you don't mind. I will play a little politics on you. I will answer what I want to answer, how I want to answer. So entrepreneurship for people of the minorities, be it race, be it gender, is a little bit tougher, because for some of us, compared to the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Jeff Bezos, who started their companies out of their dad's garages, some of us don't even have those garages to begin with. Some of us actually live in other people's garages. So just that alone, like, entrepreneurship, period, is tough. Like, not entrepreneurship as an immigrant, entrepreneurship is tough. It's like a really tough business, but it is also rewarding. What are some of the problems I've faced? The one, and this is something I'm still struggling with, so if someone has a listening ear out there, a caring heart, and a loaded wallet, reach out to me after this podcast. I am looking for investors. The toughest thing to find is capital. It's really hard. You could have the best business idea in the world. If you don't have money to start it, it won't go anywhere. It takes money to make money if you're in it for the money, but it also takes money to just start, period, for whatever reason you're in it for. It takes money to start it, and most of us don't have that money. So that's like, for me, has been the biggest struggle. Because without money, you can't buy your own space. And then it dives into my next struggle. As a budding business, you can't take out a lease for brick and mortar. You can't buy a food truck. You can't do this. So you have to find ways where you share your food, and hopefully it lands into the right bellies and the right hands and the right ears, and you build a buzz and eventually open up. So starting, you'll have to do pop-ups, you'll have to do caterings, you have to reach out to your communities and see if you can be of service without breaking your own back. Because in the beginning, I was going to all these community events, I was handing out free food, I was, and in the long run, it hurt me, because at the end of the day, you come home and you look at your bank account and you look at your passion, one is lower than the other and there's no balance. And it's tough financially, but it also ties into mental health. Losing money is not an easy thing to deal with. So those are like some of the struggles with entrepreneurship, capital, finding a place to like share whatever product or service you have to offer, and relationships, like people change, times change. Some of the same people, I don't want to say Mexicans, because these days are like, times are very sensitive. I could say some of these Mexicans that I met earlier when I was working in a South African restaurant, we've had like disagreements, and some of them we don't see eye to eye, and someone will say, I say that I hate Mexicans. No, it's relationships. When you're starting a business, yes, you're managing capital, yes, you're managing your assets, but you're also managing relationships in the sense that it's very easy to be taken advantage of if you're more on the needing side. If you're not benefiting someone, it's really easy for them to like not care for you and kind of take advantage of you at some point. So it sucks as an entrepreneur that you have to, and this has been my like biggest thing, and this will be my closing because I feel like I'm talking too much.
No, I'm taking it.
My biggest struggle as an entrepreneur, regardless of me being African, regardless of me being in food service, which is a perishable item, it's me not being able to separate business from personal feelings, because one, this I didn't go to school to be a business person. So I do this because it's a passion. I do this because it connects me to my grandma. I do this because it connects me to my culture. But at the same time, it is a business.
Yeah.
It is a business. You have to make financial decisions. You have to make strategic decisions. You have to play chess with your own business.
Yeah.
And it's hard for me to separate the two. So I've been in situations where I've committed to do a pop-up with someone for the whole summer, and that person decides to sell their restaurant overnight, and they don't give me a notice. And my whole summer plan and my whole summer program for the business has to shut down immediately.
Yeah.
And I get it. It's business. But for me, I kind of took it personally to a sense that like, you could have just said, hey, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm at with my business. My business has to shut down for whatever reason. Don't even have to give me a reason, but I just wanted you to be prepared. And you as a business, you start thinking and you maneuver accordingly. But that's the tough thing about starting a business without capital. If you don't have your own, you might have to use someone else, and you have that until someone else decides to take their something back.
Right.
So It's hard. It's hard. It takes a village. Make sure your village is a strong one and they'll support you.
Yeah. Let's end on a high note. So in terms of like your dream, so, you know, we know the realities of running the business, but in terms of the big dreams you have for Taco Africana, like what's next for, like, let's say, okay, so we're almost at the end of the year. What's, which is crazy, it's October anyway. What do you want to do in 2022? Like what do you want to do with Taco Africana? And then for people that are listening, how can they get involved? If they want to patronize you, if they want to help, like where can they find you online, for example, on social media?
Sweet. Wow. It's tough. I don't think I'll ever agree to do a podcast with another friend again. Because you end up getting so comfortable and you open your mouth and start talking too much. But the future for Taco Africana, honestly, is unbelievable for me right now. I cannot even believe it myself. Mm. It's the first time I'm announcing it publicly, but we are working on opening a storefront next year, 2022.
No way! I didn't even know that. Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah, we're working on a storefront. It will be most likely, inshallah, God bless, ancestors, look out for me. Everything goes well. It will be here in Harlem
City.
We'll be announcing a few more details later on in the year. There will be a crowdfunding campaign because you do need capital to start a business. So going back to what I said earlier, if there is a listening ear, there is a caring heart, there is a big wallet, there will be a link where you could show your love and support towards Africans who are sharing African culture and cuisine in New York City. You could donate to us before we open. When we open, you could patronize the business by coming to us, eating, sharing, and enjoying. We will have a line of products that you'll be able to buy online and be able to use in the beginning all over America and then hopefully all over the world. So short, long-term goals, I think it's opening us.
Like, this is breaking news to me too. That's amazing, Z. Congrats. That's awesome.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
That's amazing. And you can find Z, and I'll post this again when the podcast comes out, but Taco Africana on Instagram in particular, I feel like it's where you're most active. And then Z from Africa is your
personal. So just full disclaimer, because it does get a little bit confusing for some people. Z from Africa is my personal account. That's where I go crazy. That's where I talk my craziness. That's where I look for sugar mamas because someone has to pay the bills. So whatever you find there, please follow on your own parole. But the more professional aspects of my life, find me on Taco Africana on IG. Our website will also be launching in a couple of months at tacoafricana.com.
Oh my gosh. So,
yeah.
Oh boy. Okay.
No, wow. Because, I don't want to misrepresent Africa, Yom, because there could be listeners who don't know me listening to your podcast and they know your brand and they think, like, I feel like we've done a really good recording. This is most comfortable I've been, and I feel like I've shared more than I wanted to share in a good way. So someone will listen to this and they think, oh yeah, this professional chef. They go on my IG and the first pic they see is me mooning and some reason somewhere, you know. So people should be aware. So please, please, please
Oh boy. You know, I think we've had too much fun. I'm not even gonna do rapid fire questions. Like we've gotten to know Z very well in this hour. So yeah. I want to end by saying, first of all, thank you for your time. I know you're busy and you have a lot going. Well, and now I know you do have a much more going on than I even knew about. But I appreciate you coming on and sharing your perspective. And yeah, it's always good to chat with a friend. You and I were talking offline about how sometimes this can feel like work. And so it's good to just have an hour where it doesn't feel like something that I have to do, but something that I truly enjoy. So thank you.
Yes.
Thank you for coming
Thank you
on.
for being a comfortable host. It felt safe and it was very much enjoyable. I hope whoever listens took something out of it.
Yes.
And Yom will share my contact details. I'm usually pretty friendly and approachable. If you approach me the right way, if you have any questions, you are an upcoming business, you are an auntie who cooks phenomenal food, because trust and believe there's so many African aunties out there who are phenomenal cooks, like really, really, really good. Some of them are better than Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah.
But they just, for real. But they just don't know where to start. Mm-hmm. So like, if this lands in your ears and you feel like I could ever be of assistance to you, feel free to reach out. Outside of the Instagram, my email is also the same, zi.fromafrica@gmail.com. Shoot me an email, shoot me a DM. I respond unless you're a scammer. And I'd be happy to help.
Thank you so much, Z. All right.
Thank you for listening to Item 13, an African food podcast. If you like the show, please subscribe, rate, and review us on your favorite podcast app. To keep up to date, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at Item 13 Podcast. Item 13 is powered by Simplecast. Thank you for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a non-profit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.